Hi, welcome to Module 13 of SQL Server Essentials for Oracle DBA. In this module, we will discuss performance tuning and various tools that are available in SQL Server for performing performance tuning activities. So let's take a look at what are the typical methodologies used for performance tuning. Generally, in order to build performant database infrastructure, you have to make sure that all the aspects of your application work together. So you need to perform performance tuning at instance level, database level, as well as application level. In this module, we will look at some of the tools and techniques that can be used for performance tuning analysis. Let's start by discussing tuning while building. Tuning while building is a proactive approach to performance tuning, where you build your application with performance and scalability in mind. So in order to build highly performant database application, you need to start with a proper database design. So it's very important to tune the business rules and the logical design as well as physical design of your application. Then tune the application and make sure that application uses the database in the most optimal way, and can take advantage and leverage various database features. It is also important, of course, to tune the database server itself. So tuning the instance and making sure that we have enough resources and there are no resource contentions and resource bottlenecks within your database servers is very important. Tuning the underlying hardware might be somewhat more complicated, but it is very important to make sure that the hardware you buy and use for your database platform is the hardware that can support whatever workload you expect to have. So it is important to size your hardware for the expected workload of the application. Performance tuning generally is an ongoing iterative process. It never stops. There will always be some resource bottleneck, some biggest queries, and you can basically keep going and tune more queries, add additional indexes, etc., etc. The basic approach and the basic process between performance tuning is to define, identify the problem that we are trying to fix. So basically define what is the performance problem that you see and what might be the reason. Then look at the various statistics and activity monitor your database to see what might be the root cause of that problem. Once you identify the root cause of the problem, you can basically create a hypothesis for how to solve it. If you know how to solve your problem, you identify that the reason are inefficient queries, for instance, due to lack of indexing, then your hypothesis will be that creating additional indexes will improve performance. So then you create those indexes and you retest your queries to make sure that you achieved the appropriate improvement. So make sure that that you test before and after applying changes to see how those changes affected your system. If this was successful, if the changes really improved performance, you should deploy them to your production system, and you can repeat the process until you get expected acceptable performance. Another very important aspect of tuning is application tuning. Making sure that your application can actually leverage the features made available by your database platform. Make sure that the database design is correct, that your queries are written in a way that they can take advantage of appropriate indexes, that you perform data aggregation and calculations on the database side, that you don't process your data row by row, but try to process set of rows on the server side to minimize the amount of data that needs to be transmitted to the application. It is actually one of those things that is very often underestimated. The effect that application and network performance has on the database server. You also want to tune individual queries and individual database operations by identifying statements, queries, stored procedures that take most resources. Depending on the situation, you will be looking for queries that perform the highest number of reads, or take the longest time, or take the most amount of CPU time. So once you have identified those, it is important to take a look at those biggest queries first, as they often represent a bulk of your workload and of the resource utilization. In order to minimize the amount of resources used by queries, you can use a variety of techniques, from creating the appropriate indexes or adding statistics that will improve and help Query Optimizer choose a better execution plan, to query rewrites or adding hints in order to overwrite the default Query Optimizer behavior. I will demonstrate use of query hints in order to get the expected execution plan in just a few moments. Generally, you want to tune access paths to your data. You want to have shortest, simplest access path where retrieving data from the database requires the smallest number of reads. So you want to go for small, compact indexes that can be used to fulfill your query, such as covering indexes that I've discussed earlier. In case the Query Optimizer doesn't pick the best execution plan, you can force that execution plan by using either hints or plan guides. SQL Server Query Optimizer is a cost-based optimizer. It chooses the plan based on the estimated execution cost. So depending on what is the estimation of the number of rows and the amount of data that will be processed by the query, different operators will have a different estimated cost. This is not an exact science, and it is not always possible to accurately predict the number of rows that will take part in your query. So in many cases, the Query Optimizer might be off. Sometimes it will be off but just a little bit. Sometimes it will be off by orders of magnitude. You want to identify those situations where the miscalculation or misprediction of number of rows by the Query Optimizer leads to suboptimal execution plan. Generally, you will be looking for execution plans that have greatly varying estimated number of rows and actual number of rows. So, for instance, where the actual number of rows is much, much higher than the estimated number of rows. That might indicate a problem with Query Optimizer. One way to solve this problem, of course, is to provide Query Optimizer with more information. It is very important to have reliable statistics about data distribution. Those statistics need to exist, and they need to be refreshed. Luckily, SQL Server will auto-refresh statistics in databases based on certain data modification thresholds. If those thresholds are not correct for your database, there are ways to lower those thresholds or manually update statistics on a more aggressive schedule. Without those statistics, Query Optimizer will not be able to do its job. So it is very important to have them available and be able to rely on them in terms of those statistics representing the actual data distribution. Another problem that you may run into is a situation where the query optimizer optimizes your query based on the existing value for the parameter. So if your query is parameterized and has a particular parameter, query optimizer will try to see what is the value for that parameter and will use that value in its estimation and it's in its whole optimization process. This is known as parameter sniffing. Essentially, when the, it gets the query, it sniffs what is the value of the parameter and then uses that value for optimization. In case of queries that might have greatly varying number of rows, depending on what is the parameter value, you need to make sure that the query optimizer takes the right value for optimization. So you may not want to use the actual value submitted by the application, but direct query optimizer to always use a particular value that, that is maybe the most popular or most representative of the values found in the database. Let's now talk about instance tuning. It is important to tune certain resources and make sure that you can identify bottlenecks on the instance level. So one thing is, of course, ensuring that the memory allocation and the memory use is balanced. As you know, in SQL Server, you don't have as many configuration parameters as in Oracle when it comes to memory allocation. You can still, however, affect how memory is used by changing the behavior of your application and changing how the queries are generated. So for instance, it is very important to either use explicitly parameterized queries or to use stored procs in order to avoid inflation of the execution plan cache. You don't want to have thousands of single-use cache. You want to single-use plans in your cache because that will occupy a large amount of memory and will, of course, affect the amount of memory that is left for any data caching. It is also important to tune and try to leverage any I/O subsystem capabilities. So you want to have a fast I/O subsystem for your most important databases, for your transaction logs, and you want to make sure that there are no I/O bottlenecks within your system. There are a number of ways how you can leverage that and relieve a I/O bottleneck on a database system. One of the methods is, of course, to create the right indexes and make sure that those indexes are small enough so that we can keep them in memory and not perform as much I/O. How to make sure that those indexes fit in memory? Apart from adding more memory and relieving the I/O bottleneck by having more memory available for SQL Server, one of the options could be data compression. I will show you data compression in just a few moments. Data compression improves your performance by limiting the amount of I/O that is needed to read the object from disk and limiting the amount of memory that is needed in order to keep that data in cache. It is also important to make sure that you take advantage of what your storage system has to offer. So making sure that you use the appropriate RAID levels for your data and transaction log files. Personally, I try to avoid RAID 5 for database and transaction log files as much as possible due to performance penalty of RAID 5 and the minimum amount of protection it offers. If you can afford it, you should probably go for RAID 10 for all your database needs. There is a technology or approach to storage tuning known as SAME. It actually comes from Oracle and is also used for SQL Server. Same stands for Stripe and Mirror Everything. So you want to basically put everything on a number of RAID 10 arrays in order to spread the load across multiple spindles. In these days, we also very often use solid-state disks and solid-state storage for database files. That also changes the way we work with storage, because we don't have to worry about seek times, we don't have to worry about fragmentation. Those solid-state devices, the solid-state storage, offers very good performance. So if you have high-performance database that has very high requirements for response times, using solid-state storage might be a good option. Another problem that you may run into is resource contention. There's a number of different things and different types of resources that can experience contention. Everything from your data pages and locks and latches executed against those data pages to various internal synchronization structures found in SQL Server. It is relatively easy to identify such a resource bottleneck by looking at SQL Server wait statistics. So whatever are the most common wait types that your queries encounter during execution, those wait types represent various waits for resources. The highest wait type that you will see typically represents a particular data or resource contention. So it might be locking, it might be latching, it might be I/O. There will be some. There will always be some bottleneck if you have a lot of activity going on the server. The easiest way to resolve a resource contention is to create more of that resource. It is, of course, not always possible, but in many cases you can resolve contention by adding more data pages, by spreading your load on more drives, for instance, or, for instance, by creating more data files for your database in SQL Server. That will spread the load and make sure that there is less contention for SQL Server. Generally, you want to avoid a single resource that might become your hotspot and create a bottleneck. Let me now talk about SQL Server performance tuning tools that we have available. One of the most important SQL Server performance tuning tools is a profiler. SQL Server Profiler allows you to capture all the activity happening on the database server and see statistics for I/O, for amount of CPU time, and for the duration of your various queries. So this is the main tool for identifying any long-running queries. Apart from Profiler, you can also use a new feature in SQL Server 2012 called Distributed Replay. Distributed Replay can be used for testing during upgrades or migrations. It can also be used for scalability testing. So if you want to emulate much higher load on the server and see how your application would behave if you had greatly varying number of users and many more users than you currently have, you can use Distributed Replay to simulate the requested number of users. Another interesting tuning tool in SQL Server is Performance Data Collector. It's a tool that can gather certain statistics about your SQL Server activity, about query activity and about the resource usage on the servers, and store it in one central data warehouse. So you can have multiple instances of SQL Server that will be capturing this data and storing it in this central data warehouse. When it comes to tuning individual queries, generally the most important tool is SQL Server Management Studio. So SQL Server Management Studio offers us the ability to see the execution plan used for our query, and it offers us to the ability to grab a certain time and I/O statistics on our query execution. So if you want to tune your query and see how it will behave depending on the changes you perform, that is the simplest and easiest method. Run the query, see the statistics, see the execution plan, make the change, rerun the query, see how the query has improved, if at all. Another tool that can be used for automated performance tuning is Database Engine Tuning Advisor. Database Engine Tuning Advisor can be very useful if you're not familiar with the application, with the queries, and with the data structures of the database. It can take a workload, either a set of queries from scripts or a SQL trace captured using Profiler, and it can evaluate this workload and the queries run, looking for methods to improve performance and suggesting what type of indexes and what type of storage structures, such as partitioning, should be used for to improve performance of that particular workload. So it can be used to perform a vast analysis of the entire workload, not only single individual queries, but the entire workload, also including your data modifications. It will tell you what will be the impact of creating additional indexes and how it might improve performance of queries and how it might affect performance of, for instance, data modification queries that will bear the overhead of maintaining those indexes. Another important tool for performance monitoring is, of course, Windows Performance Monitor. As you have seen in one of the previous modules, there is a large number of SQL Server-related performance counters that you can capture either using Performance Monitor or directly in SQL Server using SysDM OS Performance Counters DMV. Depending on what type of problem you're encountering and what you're trying to tune, you might be looking at various performance counters. Task Manager can also be used to observe SQL Server resource consumption. So with this, I have discussed the most important tools. Let's now take a look at the practical use of some of the performance tuning options. I would like to start by demonstrating data compression. As I mentioned before, data compression can improve performance by relieving the I/O bottleneck and making your objects smaller, so they are easier to keep in memory and they are easier to read from disk because there is less number of I/O required. Now, data compression allows that at the expense of some additional CPU cycles that will be used to decode that compressed data. However, that CPU overhead is relatively small, and you have to remember that typically database applications and database servers are I/O bound. So we are relieving I/O bottleneck by spending some more of the resource that we typically have enough. So typically you have a lot of CPU headroom, you have extra spare CPU cycles, and you can use them in order to relieve some of the pressure on your I/O system. So in this demonstration, I would like to show you how you can use the compression wizard to estimate the amount of space that can be saved by compressing a particular object, and then we will implement that compression by using a Transact SQL script and compressing a particular table. So in my AdventureWorks database, I would like to navigate to a table called Sales Order Detail. Now, the sales order detail is a table that has a large number of rows. If you take a look at the properties, you can see that it has 121,000 rows, and it takes data and the index space takes about 15 megabytes in total. Can I make this table smaller by applying compression? Perhaps. Let's take a look. So clicking on sales order detail, choosing storage, manage compression, that opens the data compression wizard. This wizard can be used to change the compression levels and also estimate the amount of space that will be used for our indexes. So right now, the object is not compressed. I would like to change this compression to page compression, which is the higher of two compression algorithms and compression options available in SQL Server. This page compression will compress similar data and repeating data patterns within each data page in that object, allowing more rows to fit in the same on the same page. If I now click on calculate, SQL Server will perform calculation and will estimate the amount of space by basically testing the compression against this object, taking a sample of rows, applying compression, and seeing how the amount of data changed. So we can see here that changing the compression level from none to page would make this object about 30% smaller. So we would go from 15 megabytes to just over 10 megabytes. So it's over 30% compression saving. Another way of estimating this compression is using a script. You can use a script and a storage proc called SP Estimate Data Compression Savings. By specifying the schema, the object name, and specifying that I would like to estimate compression for the page compression, I can see the amount of space that could be saved. As you can see, in this case, I get more detailed results because I get separate results for each index. Each index on this table will be compressed separately, and they may achieve different levels of compression. So in this case, we can see that the index ID 1, which is the clustered index on the table, it's the table itself, would compress very well. It would actually achieve about 50% compression. But index ID 2, according to this estimate, would actually get larger with compression. In such cases, SQL Server will not apply compression to this object. So this object might have compression enabled by any pages that would not benefit from this compression, pages that would not actually get smaller and be able to accept more data would not be compressed. Decision whether to compress a page or not is made on individual page basis. So as you can see, depending on the index and on the data patterns within that index, some indexes will compress better than others. If I would like to enable compression on this table, I can generate a script from my data compression wizard, and this script will look something like this. It's an alter statement, alter table statement that rebuilds the table, all partitions, enabling data compression page. So if I run this statement, it takes just a moment to rebuild this table, and now the table is compressed. So we can check again using properties, and we will see how the amount of space was changed from 9 megabytes to just 4.6. So we achieved compression, about 50% compression, for the table itself. Now, by rebuilding the table, I only compressed the clustered index, the table itself. All the non-clustered indexes in this case remained uncompressed. You can apply various levels of data compression to your objects or individually for each index. The granularity is that you can decide what compression level should be used for each partition of each index individually. That offers some very flexible capabilities, and you can decide what data is better suited for compression. So in this demo, I've shown you how you can use compression to make your object smaller. By making your object smaller, you will likely relieve the I/O bottleneck and the pressure on your I/O subsystem, and you will be able to run your queries by performing smaller number of reads. In the next demo, I would like to show you how to use SQL Profiler to capture events that are happening in SQL Server. So in this demo, we'll use Profiler and capture various queries and their execution plans as they are being executed on SQL Server. So let's switch back to my demo machine. I can close this query. And I will start SQL Server Profiler by using Tools menu from Management Studio. So Tools, SQL Server Profiler, that starts the profiler. I connect to my SQL Server instance. And I can choose from various trace templates with a predefined set of events that will be captured. In this case, I am fine using the standard default template. I would like to save the trace to a file called maybe trace capture. Make the file maximum maybe 50 megabytes. Enabling file rollover, which means if one file exceeds 50 megabytes, the next file will be created. And I would like to specify some additional events. So the default set of events based on the template that I've chosen is to capture RPC completed, batch completed, and batch starting events, in addition to information about any existing connections and new login and logout information. So I'm not actually interested in login, logout, and existing connection. I'm not interested in RPC completed, but I would like to see any execution plans for the queries that are executed. So going to performance, I can choose that in addition to the query text itself and the fact that the query was executed, I would also like to capture show plan XML, which is essentially the execution plan that is used for my query. I would like to see how the queries are being executed. And now I started a trace. We can actually see this trace file was created in my scripts folder. So there is indeed a TRC trace file already existing, and the trace is currently running in the server, and any events are showing up on my inside my SQL Server Profiler. I actually already captured a show plan XML that seems to be representing a full text update mechanism running in the background on the server. But let me run a few simple queries in order to generate some activity on the server. So here is one query. Here's my query number 2, 3, and 4. Four separate queries executed from the Management Studio. If I look at my SQL Server Profiler, as you can see, there's been a number of events generated. The number of batches that were executed is actually much larger because there were also batches that were executed by the Management Studio every time we we connected. But we can, for instance, see my last query where I was retrieving all the products from product line R. And I can see that this query performed 17 reads and it took 122 milliseconds to complete. I can also see the execution plan, so a clustered index scan in this case, that was used to execute this query. Depending on the situation and depending on what you're looking at, you can also apply various filters to your trace data. So you may want to decide that you only want a particular set of queries. So let's say, let me create a new trace. And in this case, I'm going to add a different set of filters. So I'm going to capture my batch completed events, but apply a column filter that says text data like product. So essentially, I want to capture any query that mentions the word product in the query text. That way, I can narrow down and filter only, and capture only the events that are interesting for me. I can also create a trace definition file, so I can essentially script the trace for SQL Server, which means a script will be created. Let's call it trace script. And that's actually a preferred method of running your trace. We now have a SQL script that we can execute against my server. And this script has all the definition of the trace events and the trace filters that I added. And this trace can execute server side, storing data into a trace file locally on the server. That has much smaller overhead and performs much better than tracing using the graphical user interface of Profiler. So let me run this trace. I'm going to specify E scripts and trace one as the file to which we will be tracing. I can run the script and you see that trace ID 2 was created. So now this is a trace ID on the server, essentially identifies that particular trace. And I am now running the trace server side without using the profiler. I can close the profiler. This trace is running automatically on the server until I stop it. If I would like to stop my trace, there is a special command that you can use for that. Knowing that my trace ID is 2, I specify the trace ID here, and using sp trace set status stored proc, I first stop the trace and then I delete the trace definition from the server. So with this, I've stopped that trace that I was running, and I can open the trace file from disk, and it will open in Profiler and show me what events were captured. So in this case, we've only captured two events. That was an example of running the trace using a script on server side without using the SQL Server Profiler. So in this demo, you've seen the basics of how you can connect to your SQL Server instance using SQL Server Profiler and capture the activity occurring on your server as it happens. That's a very important performance tuning tool, allows you to easily capture and identify any long-running or any resource-intensive queries. You typically set a filter and you only capture queries that maybe have a duration more than X number of seconds or perform more than X number of reads. In my next demo, I would like to show you how you can affect choices made by the query optimizer for your execution plans. So we will discuss transact SQL hints and how those hints can be used to force query optimizer into behaving in a particular way. I will show you a number of different hints. There are hints for types of joins. There are hints that we can use to specify the value that should be used during the optimization process. And there are also locking hints that can change the default locking behavior found in SQL Server. Depending on scenario, you will use various hints. Some hints can improve performance, but it is also possible that by using hint and forcing query optimizer to use to perform query in a particular way, you might be actually lowering the performance of your query. Remember that hints are double-edged sword, and you can help as much as you can break the performance of your query depending on the situation. So let me switch to my demo machine and show you a few examples of using hints. The first example, I would like to force a particular type of join. So if I execute this relatively simple query, joining just two tables in AdventureWorks, you can see that the execution plan involves a merge join, so that data is retrieved from two tables in the order of joined columns, and then SQL Server performs a merge join of this data. But it is possible that we decide and discover that executing this query in some other way provides us with a better performance. If that is the case, and we've tested and made sure that really using the merge join is not the best option because hash join performs better in this scenario, you can force this behavior by using a hash join hint. So I only add one keyword here to my inner join. I specify that this inner join should be performed using a hash join algorithm. And when I run this query, SQL Server will obey the order I am giving here by specifying a hint, and will use the hash join algorithm instead of the merge join. Another possibility of using hints is using the optimize for hint. It might be we might have a situation where we have in a particular query using a particular parameter value, or as in this case, using local variables to specify the criteria for the query. Now, in some cases, SQL Server will either not know what value should be used for cardinality prediction and cardinality estimation, and therefore how to best execute that query. And in some cases, it might use the wrong parameter value. So parameter value that is not really representative for our workload. In order to overcome this problem, so let's say if I execute this right now, you can see that I only get one row, and therefore my execution plan is based on performing an index scan and key lookup to retrieve the matching rows. This might be a good execution plan for a single row, but not necessarily for other situations where the number of rows retrieved is much larger. So we can actually force the query optimizer to use a different plan and to behave differently if we specify what are the parameter values that should be used during the optimization process. So in this case, I am specifying that query optimizer should assume that the city name parameter will be Seattle, because maybe that's where most of our customers live, and we want to make sure that this execution plan is prepared to handle such a large number of rows. So by specifying a particular value here, I force the query optimizer to take this value or assume that this value will be used in the query execution. And for postal code, I specify unknown as the optimize for hint because there might be varying different postal code values. So SQL Server should just assume that the postal code is not known and assume that there will be some average data distribution that can be found in the postal code column. So if I run this query using the hint, you can see that I'm, of course, still getting the same one row because the parameters for my query, the values that I actually used to execute the query have not changed, but my execution plan might be different because now I am optimizing this query, and let me show you that in the XML format. I am now optimizing the query for a particular value. So essentially, I use parameter compiled value. This is the value that was used during the optimization process. And this is the value that was actually used to execute the query. So as you can see, you can assume a different value for query optimization and a different value for query execution. This is a very important and very useful option if you have skewed data distribution. Another example of using hints could be using a no lock hint or generally locking hint. So in this scenario, I will create a simple table with just three rows, and then I will update this table by adding one additional row to this table. Notice that I haven't committed the transaction. Transaction is still in progress. Of course, if I now try to run a query against this table, I might get blocked. So the normal situation would be I am now blocked because someone else holds an exclusive lock against some data within that table. So my count query here does not work or gets blocked for a long time. How I can fix it? I can fix it by applying the no lock hint, which is the equivalent of running your query in read uncommitted mode. This can improve performance by removing lock contention and removing lock blocking. So essentially, the fact that my transaction is still open will not block me from running the query. Notice that I get the count of rows as 4 because I'm also seeing the newly created uncommitted row. So again, I'm essentially running this query in read uncommitted level, and I avoid some of the problems. I avoid this lock contention, but at the expense of data consistency. So essentially, I'm looking at the inconsistent data here. If my first transaction rolled back, you can see that I actually got an incorrect row count. I got a row count of 4, and there were never really 4 rows in that table because that 4th row was never committed. Depending on the situation, that might or might not be a good thing. I certainly wouldn't like my bank to be running with this type of lock hints, but in some other applications where performance is more important than the consistency of the retrieved data, you may want to consider using such lock hints to improve performance and improve the response times of your queries and relieve some of the blocking. Another example of using a locking hint, something that that goes in kind of opposite direction, is to use a tab lock hint. So in this case, I can run a query that updates a number of rows in the table, either without any locking hints. So the default behavior will be to use row locks. Essentially, SQL Server will place a separate lock against each of the rows in this table as it is updating. If the number of rows is very large, there is an overhead in creating and managing all those locks. So if the concurrency of the data access to this table is not our main concern, we can improve performance of this update by running it with the tab lock hint, essentially asking SQL Server to place one table level lock against this data rather than hundreds, if not thousands, of individual row locks. And of course, in this case, 97 rows would be updated and use only one table level index. So in this demo, you've seen some examples of using hints to modify default behavior of the query optimizer and how your queries are executed. We've seen how we can use join hints, how we can use optimize for hints, and how we can use lock hints to customize locking behavior of our queries. In the last demonstration today, I would like to, in this module, I would like to show you plan guides. Plan guides is a very nice feature that allows you to apply hints to your queries without having to change the query type or the query text in the application. If the query is embedded in the application code, you may have a situation where changing the query and what the query text sent by the application is, it might be very difficult or downright impossible. So you can override the default behavior and apply essentially hints to queries that come from the application without having to change the actual query text. So let me show you how you can create a plan guide and apply a hint to an existing query. Let's say we have a query like this. This query executes against the person and human resources employee tables, and it performs a number of lookups here. So it performs, for instance, against the employee table, it performs an index seek followed by a key lookup. Given that in some cases this query will be retrieving a large number of rows, this way of executing a query might have not optimal performance. It might have suboptimal performance, and the query may not run very well. So we would like to make sure that this query scales well and can be used to efficiently retrieve even a large number of rows. And for that, we've decided that performing an index seek against the employee table followed by the key lookup to retrieve the remaining portion of the rows is not optimal. We would like to use execute this query by performing a clustered index scan, essentially a table scan against the employee table. And we would like to achieve that without having to change the actual query text. So the query text has to stay unchanged. We can do that by using a plan guide. In order to create a plan guide, you go to Programmability in your database and choose plan guides. In SQL Server 2012, you can create plan guides using this graphical user interface. In earlier versions, you had to do all that using Transact SQL. So we will call this plan guide full scan because we want to scan the entire employee table. We provide the text of the query that we are interested in, and the scope is SQL. It's essentially a piece of SQL that we would like to apply some hints to. And I can specify in parameters option table hint, and the table I'm interested in is employee table, which has alias E in my query. So in this query, I specify in the hint, I specify E for this alias, and I specify the option that I'm interested in, which is to use index 0. If I click OK, table hint index option. Oh, I'm sorry. Wrong place. It should go here into hints. There we go. This is the hint that we want to apply. And now I created a plan guide for my query. And essentially, without having to change anything in the query itself, this query will have this hint applied to it, and the resulting execution plan will change accordingly. So we can see that the clustered index scan is now used to grab the data from this table. This is a very useful functionality if you want to affect how certain queries are executed without needing to change the query text. So essentially, you apply those plan guides on the server side. So in this last demonstration, I've shown you how to use plan guides to override the existing execution plan and apply some additional options to our queries. So in this session, we have discussed what are the various tuning methodologies and performance tuning approaches, and what are the tools available in SQL Server for performing at least some of the performance tuning activities. Thank you very much for watching. And in the next module, we will talk about high availability and scalability.